Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're doing something a little unusual for us.
Yeah.
Typically, you know, we're digging through stacks of articles, maybe a white paper or two, trying to piece together a complex topic.
Right.
But today, we have a single document.
Yeah.
And it's not an article. It's not a study.
Yeah.
It's a script.
It is. It's a text titled The Tale of Islamic Jihad, The Conquest of Christian Nations by the Sword of Islam.
Right.
And right from the start, I think we need to frame this correctly for everyone listening. We aren't really analyzing a history textbook today.
No, not at all.
We are analyzing a piece of theatrical rhetoric. This is a speech that's designed to be performed. It even has stage direction, sound effects, and a very specific three-act structure.
It's almost cinematic in how it's written. It
yeah.
takes, what, about 1,400 years of incredibly dense, complex history
mm-hmm.
and just boils it down into three huge visual metaphors.
That's the perfect way to put it.
We're talking about dominoes, granite stones, and ancient roots.
Precisely. And our mission today is to unpack the architecture of this story. We want to look at how the author uses all this imagery, these performance cues, to build an argument.
And before we jump into the first act, I think we should offer a quick disclaimer because this is obviously heavy material.
Mm-hmm.
This text deals with religion, conquest, violence, the Middle East, you know, these are charged topics.
Very much so.
So just to be crystal clear, our job here isn't to validate the history or to endorse the political worldview presented.
No.
We are here as analysts. We're just looking at the content provided to understand the narrative arc this specific text is building.
We are dissecting the storytelling, not the politics.
Exactly.
And that story is built on a very specific visual hook. So let's start where the text starts. The author wants the audience to visualize something very, very specific.
Right. It opens with this image of dominoes, but not just a game on a table. The text asks you to imagine a row of dominoes stretching across the horizon of time, a row that is 1,400 years long.
It's a staggering image, isn't it?
It is.
It immediately sets the scale. We aren't talking about a single battle or a single decade. We're looking at a process that spans nearly a millennium and a half. And the author defines what those dominoes are right away.
Yeah, the text says, it's a nation, it's a culture, it's a people. So each click of a domino isn't just a piece of plastic falling.
No, it's the collapse of an entire civilization. And this sets the stage for the first act, which, you know, we can call the Garden in the Fall. The text paints a before picture of the Middle East that is very romanticized, very specific.
It calls the region the Garden of Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
That word garden really jumped out at me. It feels so deliberate. Why use that specific imagery?
Well, think about what a garden implies. It implies cultivation.
Okay.
Intentionality, structure, peace. A garden isn't a wild forest. It's something that has been tended to. By using that word, the text is arguing that the pre-Islamic Middle East wasn't some chaotic void.
It was a flourishing, cultivated place.
It
backs that up with geography, too. It says, from the mountains of Turkey to the libraries of Egypt. I thought the libraries of Egypt was such an interesting detail to include.
Well, it's a shorthand for intellect, isn't it?
Yeah.
It counters the idea that this was some primitive time or place. It suggests high civilization, philosophy, theology. The text then adds that the name of Jesus was the Song of the Land. So it establishes this baseline, a Christian, intellectual, cultivated Middle East.
But then the tone just shifts completely.
Huh.
We get the mechanism of change. And the text is very aggressive here about how that change happened.
Mm.
It explicitly argues against the idea of willing conversion.
Right. In modern historical discourse, you'll often hear about, you know, trade routes, cultural exchange, gradual assimilation.
Yeah.
This text rejects all of that. It says a shadow began to move. It attributes the transformation entirely to the cold weight of the sword.
It's a conquest narrative, pure and simple.
It is. And that brings us right back to that central metaphor, the domino effect. The text describes these nations, the farmers, scholars, and believers, as being fundamentally unprepared for what was coming. It argues they were not warring nations.
Which makes them sound innocent, but also vulnerable.
Exactly.
Like they were built for the library, not the battlefield.
Precisely. And because of that mismatch, the fall is presented as inevitable. And here's where the performance aspect of the text starts to do some heavy lifting. The text includes a stage direction here. It tells the speaker to make a sweeping motion with their hand.
Like a row falling.
And then it dictates the sound. Clink, clink, clink.
I have to say, reading that on the page, it's eerie. That clink, clink. It's so rhythmic.
That rhythm is the whole point. It sounds mechanical, doesn't it?
Yeah.
A machine doesn't have feelings. A machine doesn't stop to negotiate. It just moves. By using that sound, clink, 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 the author is suggesting that this conquest was a systematic, repetitive erasure.
It says, one by one, the lights of the Middle East were extinguished. It really emphasizes this momentum. You get this sense of a runaway train, or I guess a runaway row of dominoes, that has been moving for 14 centuries.
And the text actually puts us inside the head of the antagonist here. It refers to the enemy. It imagines the enemy looking at the final target on the map.
The tiny land of Israel.
Right. The logic presented is, I have 1,400 years of momentum behind me. Nothing can stop this fall. And if you buy into the domino metaphor, that logic is sound.
Sure.
If 1,000 heavy dominoes fall, the last little one at the end shouldn't stand a chance. Physics is against it.
But this is where the text pivots. We enter segment two, the unmovable object. The text zooms in on a specific year, 1948.
This is the climax of the narrative arc. The enemy expects another plastic domino. He expects another scholar or farmer who will just fold under the weight. But the text says he forgot one thing. You can't knock over a mountain.
I love this shift in imagery. We go from plastic dominoes to geology, stones, granite, mountains. Mm-hmm. It instantly changes the texture of the story.
It changes the physics of the story. A domino is manufactured to be unstable. It's tall, thin, and lightweight.
Its whole purpose is to fall.
Exactly. A mountain. A mountain is rooted.
And the text describes the character of Israel in a really fascinating way here to justify that shift. It contrasts them with the peaceful farmers we met earlier. It says Israel was birthed in the fire.
Mm.
It says they were trained in the art of the watchman and the skill of the warrior.
Birthed in the fire is such a dense phrase. Without explicitly listing historical events like the Holocaust or the War of Independence, it conjures up this idea of trauma hardening a people.
Right.
It argues that unlike the nations of the past, this new nation was forged specifically to withstand pressure.
And then we get the collision. The text says momentum shattered.
Yeah.
It describes the impact so vividly. Like a glass bottle hitting a granite rock.
Compare that sound to the earlier one. We had clink, clink, clink.
Soft, rhythmic, continuous.
Yeah. Now we have shatter. Smash. It's violent and abrupt. The liquid momentum of the wave hits the solid granite of the rock.
And the result isn't just a pause. It's a hard stop. The text says the falling stopped for the first time in 1,400 years.
And this is where the writer uses silence as a weapon. There is a stage direction right after that line. It says, pause. Let the silence hang for 3 seconds.
3 seconds is a long time in a speech.
It feels like an eternity. But narratively, that silence is the border. Everything before the silence is history, or the author's interpretation of history. Everything after the silence is prophecy.
That brings us to the third act, the prophecy of reversal. The text says that most people think the story ends there. The stone blocks the dominoes. We survive. The end.
Right. The blockade theory. The stone is just a dam holding back the water.
But the author says, no, the stone is out to move E. And this is where the imagery gets really wild. It starts talking about what's happening underneath the fallen dominoes.
This was the part that I found most rhetorically interesting. The text claims, deep under the soil of those fallen nations, the ancient Christian roots are still there.
Hearts that love freedom are still beating. It's this concept of dormancy versus death. The text is arguing that just because a nation fell, just because the map changed colors, doesn't mean the culture was erased.
It was just buried.
Yeah.
It's an agricultural metaphor again, calling back to the garden at the beginning. You can pave over a garden, you can burn it down, but if the root systems are deep enough, they survive. They just wait for the conditions to change.
And the text argues that the stone is the catalyst for that change. It says, as Israel pushes back against the tide of jihad, it relieves the pressure on those buried roots. It says, it's giving those people room to breathe again.
And then we get the reversal of the domino effect. The text describes a vision where the dominoes start standing back up.
Which, if we're being literal, is impossible for a domino to do on its own.
Exactly. A domino can't stand itself up. But the text frames this as a collaborative effort. It speaks of believers in the East engaging in a rising. It says, Islamic jihad being pushed back now with the help of Israel.
It issues a command. The believers in the East stand up. It's almost like a resurrection scene.
It frames it as a restoration of balance. What the sword took by force, the stone is restoring by strength. It's very satisfying narrative symmetry. You had the fall, now you have the rise.
And it ends with the map. We started with a map of lights going out. Now the text concludes that the map is being redrawn.
Right.
The era of the falling domino is over. The era of the standing stone has begun.
It's a triumphant high energy conclusion. But I think now that we've walked through the narrative arc, the fall, the collision, the reversal, we need to talk about the mechanism of delivery.
Oh, yeah.
We touched on the silence and the hand motions, but the stage directions in this text are actually doing about 50% of the work.
Yeah, let's dig into that. Because if you just read the words flat, they have meaning, but the directions tell you how the author wants you to feel.
Take the opening. The very first direction is start in a low conspiratorial tone, almost a whisper.
Why start a story about epic history with a whisper?
Well, think about what a whisper does. It pulls you in. It suggests you are about to hear a secret.
Right.
Come closer. I'm going to tell you the real history that they don't teach you. It creates immediate intimacy and trust between the speaker and the listener.
It bypasses your defenses.
Right.
If someone shouts at you, you might step back. If they whisper, you lean in.
Exactly. And then, trace the energy arc, we go from that low whisper to the sweeping motion of the dominoes, which grounds the metaphor physically. And then when we hit the stone section, the direction is raise your voice, becoming more animated and dramatic.
It mirrors the action. The low tone matches the creeping shadow. The raised voice matches the violent collision.
It's classic rhetorical structuring. You lull the audience into a trance with the rhythmic clink, clink, clink. You make them feel the hopelessness of the fall, and then bam, you use your voice to simulate the impact. You wake them up.
And then that final direction for the prophecy section. Step forward, voice full of excitement and authority.
That step forward is crucial. You are breaking the fourth wall, in a way. You are entering the audience's space. You are no longer telling a story about the past.
You're issuing a marching order for the future.
You are. You're embodying the rising that the text describes.
It's really designed to take the listener on an emotional roller coaster. Fear, then shock, then hope.
And that's why we chose to analyze this text. Regardless of what you think about the politics or the theology, as a piece of persuasive writing, it is incredibly effective. It uses simple, tangible objects, dominoes and stones, to explain centuries of complex conflict.
I keep coming back to that difference between the domino and the stone. I feel like that's the core of the whole thing.
In what sense?
Well, a domino is uniform. It has no identity. It's just a block. And it's fragile. But a stone is unique. It's ancient. It's part of the earth. The text seems to be suggesting that the reason the farmers and scholars fell was that they were, I don't know, artificial. Or maybe just too polite.
That's a deep insight. The text creates a hierarchy of reality. It suggests that the falling nations were perhaps too refined, too fragile, like a cultivated garden.
Right.
They weren't prepared for the wild. Whereas the stone represents a primal geological strength. It's ugly, maybe it's hard, but it's real. And in a collision between the refined and the real wins.
You can't knock over a mountain. That line really sums it all up.
It does, and it connects to that final provocative thought about the roots.
Right, the idea that the roots are still there.
It's a challenge to the concept of conquest itself. The text is asking, can you ever truly erase a people? You can change their government. You can change their language. You can change the name of their country. But the text argues that culture deep, spiritual culture is harder to kill than a political state.
It just goes dormant.
Exactly. It wastes. It argues that history isn't linear. Just because the momentum has been going one way for 1,400 years doesn't mean it can't snap back in the other direction in a single generation.
If the stone moves.
If the stone moves.
Well, this has been a fascinating look at how narrative structure can be used to frame history and prophecy. We've gone from the whisper in the garden to the shout of the stone.
It's a reminder that metaphors aren't just, you know, poetic decorations. They are how we make sense of the world. And in this text, the metaphors are the weapon.
Absolutely. The era of the standing stone. We'll see if the map really does get redrawn. That wraps up our deep dive into the tale of Islamic Jihad. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll catch you on the next deep dive.